Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
And NPR's Juan Williams does start us off today to talk about President Obama and the country's emerging healthcare czar, Senator Olympia Snowe, and maybe also some fraying that Juan is seeing between President Obama and the progressive left. Hi, Juan. Welcome back.
Good morning, Brian. And let me just say thanks to Roberta and Erwin, because I think that what we do, not only at NPR, but here at NYC, really is up to people who decide, this kind of media is so important to them, this media they can trust.
Thanks for saying so. And let's begin with health care and Senator Snowe. We talked about this yesterday, too, but the front page of the Times today has some Democrats worrying that the White House has given too much power to this particular moderate Republican senator from Maine to affect the final shape of a health reform bill. But considering the headcount in the Senate, does the president have a choice?
Yeah, he had a choice. I mean, if he had stuck with public option, if he had forced it, I don't know that he would have had some of the conservative Democrats you're talking about, but he certainly would not have had Olympia Snowe. And the key in terms of the political dynamic here, Brian, is that the White House wants at least one Republican because they think that acts as a buffer, if you will, against defections from conservative Democrats. I mean, if you're a conservative Democrat, how are you going to say, wait a second, I'm a Democrat, but I'm voting against the bill that even Olympia Snowe and now likely Susan Collins, the other senator from Maine, are going to support? It makes it that much tougher for the conservative Democrats to defect.
And I gather that Snowe would vote against a bill that includes a public option health plan, as you said, but she supports a bill that has a public option trigger. That is, if the other reforms don't succeed in covering the uninsured and bringing down costs, the public option would then be created. Why are pro-public option Democrats so opposed to a trigger?
Because they think that it'll never happen. They think that the will to make it happen will diminish as the consequences become apparent then, and the consequence, of course, is hikes in the cost and the spending. And don't forget the anti-government arguments that remain very strong, particularly from the right, but they don't disappear as you come towards conservative Democrats, that government's becoming too big and you already have skyrocketing costs that, in terms of the trajectory, are going to be off the boards for Medicare and Medicaid in a few years. So if you then add in the public option, in a few years, the will to say, yes, the trigger is here. The insurance companies did not reform. We clearly now have met the standard. And people say, yeah, but what about the deficit? Yeah, but what about Medicare? We need these other things done before we come to public option. So they think this is the moment, that if you're going to get it done, do it now.
Listeners, we want your comments and your questions for Juan Williams. We can talk about Senator Snowe's role in the health reform debate. We can talk about whether you think the White House is going in the right general direction for you. Any Washington politics, which Juan Williams can comment on, which is probably any Washington politics, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And I know you want to talk about some disillusionment with President Obama among progressives that we're all seeing. And I certainly hear it from some of our callers. He's too wishy-washy on the war, on public option, on gay rights. Do you see a particular flashpoint here?
Well, clearly last weekend in Washington, the Human Rights Campaign, the dinner, and then the march, what you saw was, for the first time, I think, on public display, the left saying, wait a minute, you promised that you would deal with don't ask, don't tell. You promised you would help with defense of marriage, especially in light of all the kind of individual, local, statewide actions against gay marriage in the country. Where is that promise? Here's someone that the gay community clearly came out and voted for, but also put a lot of money behind. And so people want some return on their investment, to be crude about it, but we are talking politics. And then, of course, if you extend that in terms of the ongoing discussion about putting added troops in Afghanistan, if you look at the unions this morning coming out and saying we demand a public option in terms of the health care plan, and most Americans still support public option despite what you may be hearing out of your congresspeople, I think the left is starting to demonstrate a little bit of disquiet with the pace of the Obama administration's actions. And if you, of course, then move on to things like immigration, they say, or clean air, climate change, they say, we don't see any action.
What about the polls on public option? You said most Americans support. Have you looked at the polling on this?
Oh, yeah.
And?
Most Americans support public option. It's still, I think it's close to 60%.
Close to 60%. Does this matter, that is, the disaffection of people who are progressive politically to the president's ability to get things done? I mean, even today, even after last year's election, and how quickly we forget about the coalitions that formed and the fervor around, you know, the new age that might be dawned if Barack Obama was elected president. Even with all of that and all the new voter registration and everything else, do progressives still have little power to influence this president?
You know, progressive is such an interesting term. What do you mean by that? Do you mean liberals? Do you mean Democrats? What do you mean?
Well, I guess what you might call liberal Democrats in traditional terms, yeah.
Well, the base certainly has some impact, but remember that the key to President Obama's victory is the independent voters. And when you see slides in President Obama's numbers, his approval ratings, what we've been seeing over the last month, really the month before, during the summer, all those contentious Tea Party gatherings and town hall meetings and all that, it was a slide in terms of the independent voters. The strong base of the liberal Democrats did not ever veer away from President Obama. Now, by the way, his numbers have started to climb back in the last month. I'm not exactly sure why, but people are...
In general, around the country, among independents?
Independents coming back to him over the course of the last few weeks. Yeah.
But that political analysis that you just articulated would be cause for the president to dismiss disaffection on the left and say, well, I don't have to worry about those people.
Look, here's part of the thinking, Brian. If you are the Democratic president coming after 8 years of George W. Bush and after Bill Clinton, and you say to yourself, now what tripped up Bill Clinton? Well, it tripped him up on terms of don't ask, don't tell, his stance on the military and gays, right? So we don't want to do that too quickly. Let's put that down the road. And he tripped up also on health care by having these secret plant meetings and putting plans in place quickly. Let's do this in terms of allowing the Congress to set the agenda. It's almost as if, you know, you're fighting the last war for President Obama, and it's had not a beneficial consequence. Sometimes it's caused him to make mistakes.
Though progressives would say the real lesson of the Clinton administration is that he tried so hard to curry favor with the center that he lost his center, and so everything fell away.
Now, and interestingly, that's what I hear from Rahm Emanuel, the chief of staff in the Obama White House, that, and it's the argument he makes to people on the left and in Congress that, look, we might be slow in our going here, but you can't go anywhere. Let's not pretend that if you turn away from this president or turn your back on this president, it's more likely you're going to get reelected in 2010. People are going to judge the Democrats on the basis of what we accomplish, be it health care or Afghanistan, and it's going to be judged as a package with President Obama in the lead.
NPR's Juan Williams with us here in the studio at WNYC, and Terry in Hicksville has a public option compromise, I think. Hi, Terry.
Hey, how you doing, Brian? Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you.
Just a question would be, if the public option can't pass, which I do support, if the senators won't support that, we need to move to a compromise position, which would be, let's let the states or even go down to the county and city level decide if they want to be enrolled in the public option or not. And whoever doesn't want to be, they could opt out.
State by state. Opt in, opt out for public option. What do you think about that one?
Well, it's close to the co-op idea because you can get groups of states or people within a state to form some kind of co-op, and then you could have government subsidies for people who choose to participate in the co-op to encourage participation. But again, it would not be this nationwide program, and I think lots of people fear that if it's in certain areas and not in other areas, that would distort the marketplace.
The co-op idea, is that in the Baucus Snow bill that came out of the Finance Committee?
No.
So not the public option that's really government-run and not this independent, not-for-profit co-op idea either?
Nothing.
Larry in New Hyde Park, you're on WNYC. Hi, Larry.
Hi, good morning, guys. I really admire this guy. I got 3 points. Number one, do you think the president is spending enough time in New Orleans? Number two, if you were President Obama, would you withdraw from Afghanistan? And number three, Don't you have a doggy bag next to you where you sit next to Bill Pristol? I'll be
off here. Thank you, Larry. You want to take the last one first?
Well, no is the answer. I mean, you know, it's interesting when you have to go up against Bill Kristol or anybody who is so strongly right-wing, you know, an ideologue. I find it really interesting. It's almost like I spend most of my time trying to correct the spin, you know, like saying, hey, wait a minute, wow, that's a, you know, just set the facts straight. And I think people appreciate it when you just lay out the facts that are there, whether you're left or right or whatever.
So I've got a Bill Kristol argument for you that I saw him make sitting next to you on Fox News when he said, look, the president accepts the idea of fighting the war in Afghanistan.
Right.
That's not in play. So if you're going to fight the war, why not commit the maximum number of troops that General McChrystal is asking for, which, by the way, might be a lot more than 40,000, we're now learning, might be 60,000, 80,000.
Well, that's the answer. That's the answer to this question, that where does it stop? Where does it stop? So if McChrystal wants 40 now, but, oh, no, it's not 40, it's 60. And then, you know what, in a couple months, it's going to be more. And here's the thing. Everybody says it's analogous to the surge in Iraq. And then you see numbers that indicate that if we, as the American military, put those comparable numbers on the field, it would be 600,000, Brian. 600. And we're already up to, you know, close to 100,000. So exactly, not, defining the mission is critical to my way of thinking. But secondly, how much political support do you think the American people are going to give after 8 years in which we've had forces there? You're getting me on a rant. I'm sorry.
That's good. How do you get to 600,000?
How do you get, in terms of how many American forces would have to be on the ground given the population of Afghanistan as opposed to the population
and
of Iraq?
And then we're really talking Vietnam.
Well, this would be much bigger than Vietnam. And also, how long? You know, how long are you going to stay there and to what end? If you want a stable government, well, gee, I don't think the Karzai government's exactly the partner that you want.
And to Larry's question about New Orleans, today is the first time that he's going as president to New Orleans, though he visited a lot in the years since Katrina when he was a senator and when he was a candidate. I was surprised to hear that.
I was, too. And I tell you why. Again, you know, I live in a very political world, but it seems to me that it was an opportunity to clearly distinguish himself from the Bush administration and say that he is committed, interested, and I thought that it was also given the population is so heavily black in New Orleans and so heavily poor, I think it was a way to signal his commitment to that population.
And again, he didn't. Bob in Stamford, you're on WNYC with Juan Williams. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Leonard. Good morning, Juan.
Good morning.
Just wanted to say that I think that the public option would be such a sweeping change for America. It would just change the psyche of America. And I really hope there is the possibility that we can change like that. The public option would remove a lot of fear of illness and sickness from Americans. And I think that would be a really big change for the nation. My question for you, Juan, is this is so big and it's so important for us, almost unparalleled as a country. Is there a possibility of a national referendum to really get the pulse and to actually have people vote on this sort of thing as opposed to leaving it in the hands of Congress?
Wow, national referendum. We've never had one on anything, have we?
No. And
it doesn't happen to be in the Constitution.
No, but I think a national referendum is elect this man president or this woman president, and if you don't, you know, then you're signaling your discontent or your support. The second thing to say is California's had lots of referendums, and boy, if you look at their budget issues right now, it hasn't worked out so well for them. But, you know, what was interesting to me in listening to the question was he said this was unprecedented. And I think to myself, wait a second, what about Social Security? What about Medicare? What about a veterans health care system that we have in place? These are things all run by the government. And I don't know, though, does it make you less anxious? I guess it gives some sense of support to the elderly that they have Social Security as a backstop in their lives. But I think that we still have, you know, a capitalistic system and marketplace dictates, and we have a very anxious electorate, I must tell you. When you look, again, we look inside the numbers, most Americans still say the country's headed in the wrong direction.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, Leonard Lopate at 12 today, John Schaefer at 2, Juan Williams for another 2 minutes. Two things real quick. One, is the Nobel Peace Prize fueling a backlash right and left that matters in any way?
No. And quickly, no. The reason being that it's a short-term hiccup, and clearly I wonder if President Obama, when he woke up last Friday and they told him, I think instead of celebrating, he must have grabbed his head and said, oh, my gosh, the weight of expectations. You know, he's a blessed child, President of the United States, Nobel Peace Prize in 1 year. But now his critics are saying, for what? You know, exactly. Is he just a rock star or does he actually, you know, show horse or workhorse?
And banking reform. We've been talking about the Dow hitting 10,000 and the Wall Street bonuses returning to 2007 levels. But the administration has not gotten banking reform done in a way to reduce the incentives for Wall Street to act foolishly again. We had so much anger on the show yesterday.
Well, that's what I'm hearing. So what kind of show are you running here? Because you're supposed to cater to your audience, Brian. You're not supposed to antagonize the listeners, but your listeners on Wall Street think you're a bum for going after them. Well, you know what? I think you're on target. And I would add,
just for that, we need the reforms in place that won't cause that won't cause another too big to fail meltdown because they think they have the taxpayer at their back to act foolishly,
which is accurate. Of course, we want them to donate to WNYC, but yes, you know what I think, and this is what's striking to me. There was a piece in the New York Times last weekend about the high number of banks that continue to fail in the United States, and of course, there's a continued credit crunch in the United States. And where, you know, and then you think, wait a minute, where'd the money come from to even get us to this point in terms of saving the number of banks that we have? It came from the Federal Treasury. Where'd the money come from for Wall Street? Came from the Federal Treasury. And yet, when you ask people to react and behave responsibly in terms of pay, in terms of putting something back in, then they say, wait a second, we're a capitalistic structure here. Why is the government telling us what to do? I think they think it's a one-way street. Sorry.
NPR's Juan Williams. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome, Brian.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC, still to come this morning, 30 issues in 30 days on the rights and responsibilities of drivers, plus James Fallows from The Atlantic and Anna Deavere Smith. Stay tuned.